everybody. I said earlier today I would try to get you details on the logistics for tomorrow, and I have it. It's quite simple. The president will make remarks at 11:30 a.m. at the in the Cross Hall. And we'll do expanded press pool.
Do you want to expand on this remarks you said earlier today that he is pretty far down the road on his decision?
No, I don't have much to add. Obviously, the president's already spoken to General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker and heard their views and gotten the views from the State Department and also from the Joint Chiefs. He's also talked to Prime Minister Maliki and others within the Iraqi government over a period of time, and I think he feels pretty comfortable with the direction he's headed in, but he's going to have a meeting this afternoon with members of Congress as well to hear their take on the testimony and where we are and to give a little preview of where he's going.
Will he address the issue of tour lengths in his decision?
There's going to be a range of issues that are discussed in the president's remarks tomorrow, so I'm going to decline to comment until he has a chance to give them.
Do you want to talk about Speaker Pelosi's decision to put off a vote on the Columbia trade bill?
Sure, I'm happy to have a chance to respond to that. Speaker Pelosi today did something unprecedented in the history of negotiating trade deals in announcing that Democrats would change the rules in the middle of the game. Trade Promotion Authority is a tool. Many of you have followed this matter followed trade deals for a long time. Know that it is something that we use to negotiate trade deals in good faith. Today's announcement shows that any sense of good faith in our process of negotiating trade has evaporated. We think this is an awful precedent. We think it's a terrible thing for this administration, but it's also terrible for all future administrations, both Republicans and Democrats, because countries will not be able to have faith in our word when we're negotiating trade deals. We worked tirelessly to work with members of Congress on this trade bill, and we did it according to the rules. We achieved a bipartisan agreement with Speaker Pelosi last May 10th, 2007, to reopen trade agreements to address labor and environmental standards that she was concerned about. Those concerns were addressed by us. We held over 400 consultations with members of Congress. We provided draft implementing legislation in advance. We even shuttled members of Congress to see for themselves the progress in Colombia. We went over and beyond the requirements of Trade Promotion Authority to try to get this done. Trade Promotion Authority also has requirements for Congress, and that is that at the end of a 90-day period, 90-day legislative days, that there be a vote. It is clear that there are many in the Democratic Party who would like to kill this deal, and they want to do so without having to have their fingerprints on it, and they want to do it in a way where they don't have to take a vote. And we think that it is extremely unfortunate, and you can bet that President Bush is going to bring this up at 3 o'clock when he sees the leaders.
Dana, picking back up on the speech again tomorrow, will the president be addressing sort of the bigger picture questions that were talked a little bit about in the hearings yesterday? Senator Warner raised a question, are we safer? Is America safer because of this? And Senator Hagel raised some questions about where's the diplomatic surge. Does the president address the nation and those kinds of questions tomorrow?
Sure. Those are issues when the president talks about Iraq that he addresses every time he has a chance to talk about it. And so the speech is broad and it covers a range of issues. I don't anticipate it'll be any longer than about 12 minutes, 12 to 15 minutes. And he will touch on those things, but he touches on those in the speeches that he gives anytime he has a chance to talk about Iraq.
Those two Republican senators really seem to be at a loss for understanding progress in Iraq.
With all the testimony, I didn't see the questioning in between those two senators, but I do think that Ambassador Crocker and General Petraeus have done a very good job of providing their very candid and frank assessment about the progress that has been made because of the surge and the challenges that lie ahead. And one of the things that General Petraeus said is that the gains we've made are fragile and they're reversible. And that's why he has made the recommendation that he has made that everyone got to hear yesterday, and then you'll hear from the president tomorrow.
You said earlier today that it was not possible for the president to pull out of Iraq before he leaves office. And it was so easy for him to go in 5 years ago. Why can't he pull out now?
I don't think any of that was easy. Not the decision and certainly none of the logistics, and especially everything that weighs heavy on him and obviously the families of the loved ones, their loved ones who have died in this fight. But what I was saying, Helen, is that it is, one, the president thinks it is way premature to pull out troops now. One, it was dangerous for our own national security, but also for the innocent Iraqis who are there.
How is it dangerous for our national security? Are the Iraqis a threat to us?
Helen, in case you missed it, Osama bin Laden has said that he would like to establish al-Qaeda's roots in the Arab world. He has looked to Iraq for that place, and we have thwarted that. We have denied them that safe haven, but they almost got it. They were on their way to being very aggressive. They were very aggressive in 2006 and stoking sectarian violence and terrible deaths of innocent people. And the surge was a lot more than just sending additional troops in. It was a change in strategy in many different respects, not just in how we dealt with population protection, but also the provincial reconstruction teams. And the president will talk about them tomorrow as well and all the good work that they've done. And obviously they've done a very good job because the both Afghanistan governors as well as the government of Iraq has asked for more of that work, where we help with medical issues and economic development and political development and reconciliation. This is hard work. We are making it. We are achieving some things, and it's one by one, and those things are building on themselves, but we're not going to be able to pull out immediately. That is just not something that President Bush would do.
Yes. There are reports that the Fed is considering new steps to address liquidity problems in the financial markets if what they've done so far doesn't take hold. Is the administration involved in that?
Not that I'm aware of. I think that obviously we are kept apprised of developments, but the president has full confidence in Chairman Bernanke and the decisions he's made, but I've not heard that specifically, what you just said.
And I was wondering, first of all, and I have a second question, do you have any further detail on Petraeus and Crocker coming to the White House tomorrow for breakfast? Will they be there for the remarks?
I wasn't able to confirm that. I will check for you. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And then on Colombia, so where does this leave the Colombian free trade deal? Is it officially dead? Is there anything more the White House can do? And what do you see as the impact now on U.S.-Colombian trade and also on relations with the region?
Well, one of the reasons that we're so concerned about this deal with Colombia is because of all that it says, not just about leveling the playing field for our products going into Colombia, but because of the national security matters. We have an ally there in South America. We have negotiated in good faith a trade deal with them. And I think that if you look to people who are against this deal, they don't make the case that it's not important for our national security, because that argument would be very flimsy. They also don't make the case that it would be bad for our workers, because right now, almost all of the products coming into our country from Colombia come in without tariffs. But that is not true for our products that we're trying to sell to Colombia. And that's all we're trying to do with this Colombia Free Trade Agreement. So we are very concerned. I think that people need to also look to what President Uribe has been able to do in the past 7 years. A few numbers. Kidnappings in Colombia since he took office are down by 83%. Homicides are down by 40%. Terrorist attacks down 76% since 2002. They've had record economic growth. They had 6.8% economic growth in 2007. That's the highest in 8 years. Public school enrollment has increased to 92%. Poverty has decreased by almost 20%, reaching record low levels. And unemployment is at its lowest level in a decade. And in addition, for those who are concerned about the trade unionists in Colombia, homicides of trade unionists have fallen by 80% since 2002. People are much safer today in Colombia because of President Uribe. And the president has worked with him on a variety of matters. And one of them has been on trade. And we are very concerned. I will say that obviously the deal is not dead yet because there's been no votes taken. But we are very concerned about the signal that Speaker Pelosi gave today, because we think it's not just bad for this administration, but for all future administrations. Because the U.S. Trade Representative under Trade Promotion Authority is empowered to negotiate on behalf of the United States. And what country, after this action, will look to the trade representative, be it Sue Schwab, our trade representative, or whoever it is in the future, and think that they'll be able to count on their word? It's very, very troubling.
Dana, Speaker Pelosi says that if she were to bring that to a vote right now, it would fail. Would you prefer that it
Let's
fail?
Let's have that vote then. Let's have that opportunity, and let's put people on the record. Because I think there are a lot of people up there, a lot of Democrats, who don't want to have this bill. This trade deal go through. They don't want to have their fingerprints on killing it either.
So you would prefer that to negotiate?
Well, let's be honest about it. We think that we could get it to a position where it could pass. Sure, we do. But the fact that they don't even want to have a vote should maybe tell you something, because maybe she's not so confident of the votes that they say that they have.
But she's suggesting the way to get it to pass is to continue to negotiate on the
We have negotiated. Judgment. We have negotiated, and we have addressed her concerns about on labor matters, on environmental standards. Go back and look at the coverage from May of 2007, where many people were very surprised at how we compromised and all the concessions that we made on matters in order to deal with that. And in addition to that, we've said that we will continue to work with them on trade adjustment assistance for workers who are for workers here who are concerned about losing their job and what that means to them in terms of worker retraining. We have bent over backwards to make this happen. I think that it's it will be interesting to see how the president deals with that today.
Follow on that. Okay. You sound a little angry. Is the White House angry?
I think we're pretty fired up about it. Look, it is the right thing to do. The free trade agreement with Colombia is the right thing to do, and they know it. And that's why they don't want to have to take a vote on it, because their special interests are pressuring them not to let this deal go through. The unions.
Pardon?
The unions.
Isn't it true, though, that if a vote were taken after the election, once the political pressure is off, that the deal would have a better chance of passing?
Does anyone really think that they're going to call for a vote after that? I really doubt it.
Well, what if they set the rules up so that, change the rules so they had to?
Well, we'll look at whatever sort of rules they want to come up with, but we have rules. It's called Trade Promotion Authority. It's in statute. There are requirements for the executive branch and requirements for the legislative branch. This is a law that has been long in practice. And I don't see any need to change the rules. They should go ahead and move forward in good faith, not change the rules in the middle of the game, and let us have this vote.
Okay, but also you don't deny that technically they have the right to do what they're doing, do you?
No.
You don't deny that they have that. They do have that right, in other words, correct?
As far as I know, they have the right to do it, but it's not the right thing to do.
Is the president going to say anything directly about this
today? To you all? I don't think so. I'm channeling him.
Dana, in an interview with EWTN, the president was asked specifically, you are now planning on going to the Olympics, to be at the opening ceremonies at the Olympics. How can you in good conscience go to that ceremony, Mr. President? He answered, because I'm going to the Olympics for starters, and my plans haven't changed. Dana, is he going to the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games?
I would just leave it as how the president stated it. We haven't announced the president's schedule.
So you can't say right now whether he's going to the opening ceremonies or not.
I cannot.
You can only say that he's going to the Olympics.
Yes, but I'm not trying to signal anything by saying that. I don't have the president's schedule. It is way too far in advance for us to announce a president's schedule.
Okay. Nancy Pelosi said today that about the opening ceremonies and the party, that she hopes the White House realizes there's not a party going on in Tibet, saying that you shouldn't go to the opening ceremony.
Maybe she should check out what the president just said on camera about pressuring China both publicly and privately before, during, and after the Olympics. He just said it just now with a meeting with the senior minister from Singapore, in which they spent a lot of time talking about China and human rights and Tibet. And in particular, the president said that China would be in good stead if it would just reopen the dialogue that it had with the Dalai Lama or the Dalai Lama's representatives.
One last thing. For people who are reading between the lines here that you're not being able to be pinned down on this, is it possible that the president could go to the Olympics but not go to the opening ceremonies?
I'll refer you to my first answer.
But is this different than if we had asked you this question a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago, we said you're going to the opening ceremonies. Does this
That's
suggest...
Not true. Did you ask me that? Did I say that?
I think it's been pretty clear that he was planning on going.
He said he's going to the Olympics. We have not given out the president's schedule, and even before, I've not given out any details about the president's schedule when it comes to the Olympics. So it's wrong to say that I've changed my story.
Since this issue has become sort of moved to the forefront here, is there any reexamination, recalibration, or rethinking of the dynamics that would have the president at the opening ceremonies?
Not that I'm aware of.
Dana, what Olympic sports might the president be most interested in and might his journey center around?
I don't know. I mean, he's a sports fan.
Is it true he's going to the shot put?
I don't have any details on his schedule. It's premature for me to say. Peter.
back on Iraq, you mentioned earlier that the president's already at work on issues that would pertain to the transition to his successor.
Sure.
Two questions. What is he doing along those lines, and will that kind of reassurance be part of the tone of the speech tomorrow?
Well, one of the things that we've been working with the Iraqis on is the overall framework agreement for our forces to be able to operate legally in Iraq. Come December, the UN mandate expires, and so we've been working with the Iraqis as well as the Congress, and they've been getting updates. And they got one yesterday from Ambassador Crocker, and those negotiations are underway with the Iraqi government. But in addition to that, we also have, through the Declaration of Principles, working with the Iraqis on an agreement where we would continue to help them on the economic development, the diplomatic tracks, cultural and scientific spheres, so in several of the non-military areas as well. So the president not only is working on the legal framework, but also on how to make sure that the gains that they've made can take hold, root themselves, so that there's a good base of foundation. Now, in many ways, Iraq is going to come back faster than Afghanistan. Afghanistan's from where Afghanistan started. If you compare the two, Iraq and Afghanistan, the differences are quite stark. And Iraq is starting to spend much more money on their own reconstruction. Just yesterday, I said that they had decided to pledge $350 million to three of the areas that had been beset by violence most recently, but not just to help with reconstruction, but also jobs programs and housing programs. And those are things that we can continue to help them on through the provincial reconstruction teams as well.
Was this idea of transition work going to be part of the tone of the speech
tomorrow? No. The point that I made earlier today is that the president is working to make sure that we have enough troops in the area to do the job that needs to be done, and that we are working on the other tracks as well, economic, diplomatic, and political, to make sure that the next president, whoever it is, has a good foundation from which to start.
How far can those other tracks go as long as the kind of violence that's been happening in the past few weeks
I think you can just look at to the Ambassador Crocker's testimony, in that they've been able to move forward on many of the different laws that they've been working on, and they have the revenues. They're starting to get the revenue stream now that can allow them to do even more. But the security portion of it is critical if we are going to continue those gains.
I understand you do not intend to submit the agreement to Congress, the agreement with the Iraqi.
We have said that we will continue to work with Congress, brief them on it fully. That's what Ambassador Crocker said he would do. It's not necessarily an executive agreement like this. Isn't something that is subject to a yes or no vote by the United States Senate. Other countries, under their constitutions, may have that type of a rule, but we don't. But that doesn't mean we're not going to work very closely with Congress.
To make an end run around the authorization.
No, it's not, Helen. No, it's not, Helen. No.
Well, why can't you submit it to Congress?
I just explained why. Go ahead.
Jenny, did the president know about the Myanmar referendum date when he spoke out in the Oval Office? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Also, yesterday, Ambassador Crocker said he thought that al-Qaeda on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan was a greater threat to U.S. national security than al-Qaeda in Iraq. Does the president agree with that, and does that have any bearing on the debate about resource allocation?
The president's concerned about both, but I've not heard him describe it as prioritizing one or the other. Al-Qaeda is dangerous, full stop. Ken?
Has Ambassador Khalilzad discussed with the White House his plans to leave his U.N. post?
I saw the reports about that. I know that the United Nations spokesperson is saying that he has no immediate plans to resign, and beyond that, I don't have any other information. I just saw that before I came in because I was in a Singapore meeting. Richard?
If stimulus sneaks its way into the meeting today with all the other topics, has the president's opinion changed on the need for any other Stimulus 2 type legislation before May, before the rebate changes?
At the moment, no. I think the president feels strongly that we should allow the first stimulus package to move ahead, and that means that direct deposits the first week of May, checks going out in the mail the second week of May, and for a total of $160 billion worth of a stimulus package. Part of that also is the small business provision that he most recently talked about when he went out to that event in Sterling, Virginia. So he thinks that we needed the stimulus package, we need to let it work, but we'll continue to talk to Congress, and he told Speaker Pelosi yesterday that he would listen to her today.
Has the White House had any reaction to the fact that U.S. counterterrorism officials are confirming that senior al-Qaeda commander Abu al-Masri, who was believed to have helped plan the 2005 subway bombing attacks in London and then the 2006 plan to blow up planes coming from the U.S. to Canada. He died apparently a few months ago in Pakistan.
And I saw the reports, and now I don't have any comment on it. Go ahead.
Dana, thank you. Two questions. First, since the Bush administration submitted a brief to the U.S. Supreme Court asking for the overturning of the death penalty of Jose Medellin, who confessed in 1993 to the rape and murder of two teenage girls in Houston, does the president believe that former New Jersey police officer Scott Loper, who was jailed in Canada for 4 years without being allowed access to U.S. consular services, deserves the same Bush support as Medellin?
I'm not aware of that case, but...
Is the president concerned that when Mr. Loper was imprisoned by Canadians, his son Eddie, now 11, disappeared and has yet to be found?
I just don't have any information for you. Refer you to the Justice Department.
Dana.
Yes, Boyle?
Two quick questions, thank you. One humanitarian question. As far as the United States is concerned, it's a land of immigrants and has been always welcomed people from around the globe. And now in Virginia, illegal immigrants are being targeted and they have run out of prison spaces and asking the federal government, that means the president, to give more prison spaces for those people. My question is that also small businesses are running out of workers because those illegals who are doing the jobs, they cannot find anybody else to do the jobs.
Let me just stop you there because the president's position has been very clear. He wanted a comprehensive immigration reform proposal that included a temporary worker program that would help both small businesses and immigrants who are trying to come into our country temporarily to work. And we were not successful in getting that done with Congress, and we don't think that they'll take it up this year either.
Thanks.